Welcome to the Personal Financial Planning Section podcast, delivering insights from experts on tax, retirement, estate, risk management, investment planning, and practice management, designed to help you best serve your clients and take your practice to the next level. I'm your PFP section host, Sarah Bradley. Be sure to visit us at aicpa.org/PFP and stay tuned at the end of the episode for information on how to access valuable resources. And now over to our guest.
Thank you, Sarah. Hi, I'm Nadine Lee, Managing Director of the Colony Group, an independent fee-only financial advisory firm with over $10 billion under management. For over three decades, the Colony Group provides objective, tax-sensitive wealth management advice to individuals and their families. Earlier this year, we published our book, Financial Planning for Executives and Entrepreneurs, available on Amazon, from which I've drawn much of today's discussion. During this podcast, we will be focusing on helping clients simplify and optimize their gifting to charities by establishing accounts at donor-advised funds, otherwise known as DAFs. DAFs are available at most of the major brokerage firms, community foundations, and a slew of major charitable institutions. Initially, we will be talking about using these accounts for donations of cash and marketable securities. Then we'll shift gears and talk about the unique opportunities DAFs provide for qualified donations of complex assets. Complex assets include closely held businesses, investment partnerships, and real estate. One of the delights of being an advisor is the opportunity to help clients use their wealth to support the public good. Over my career, I've seen clients create grad schools and other educational programs, medical facilities, museums, research programs, and other institutions that are complete game changers. Making philanthropic planning part of your services not only maximizes the impact of such gifts, done properly, it can have a major effect on your client's income tax and estate liabilities, thus freeing up money for other purposes and for even more philanthropy. Other than those taxpayers who solely rely on qualified charitable donations from their IRAs, those are clients over 70 and a half, and under the current rules, you can use your IRAs to make $100,000 worth of gifts. Other than those, we usually suggest that clients establish an account at a donor-advised fund as a primary vehicle for non-IRA charitable gifting. A DAF applies to a wide range of donors, from those with modest means to very wealthy families. A donor-advised fund, community foundation, and account is a powerful tool to simplify the management of charitable giving. Let me tell you about my top five reasons for this infatuation. Number one, using a DAF separates the timing of the tax deduction from the timing of the donation to charity, to the ultimate charity. The charitable deduction occurs when you contribute money, marketable securities, or other assets to the donor advised fund. Under current rules, there is no required minimum charitable distribution from the DAF. This creates the opportunity to bunch deductions for your taxpayer into a given year. That can help maximize itemized deductions affected by the recently increased standard deduction. It also is helpful when you have a big income year. You can potentially avoid tax traps by significantly increasing the gift to the DAF in that year. Therefore, you may avoid going into higher brackets that can affect either ordinary income or capital gains taxation or other thresholds that tend to dramatically increase taxes and or dramatically increase Medicare premiums when you cross over those thresholds as well. Okay, so we've got timing of the tax deduction being separated from the timing of the donation to the ultimate charity. Then my second reason for loving these DAFs is simplification. First, we've got all those substantiation rules. And my fellow CPAs, you know we spend lots of time on the phone, email with clients, begging and pleading and explaining what those rules are. In the case of using your DAF, the only gift that needs to be substantiated is the gift into that donor advised fund. That's the only detailed substantiation required. Gifts from the donor advised fund to the individual charities do not need to go through the substantiation and acknowledgments. The record keeping, especially at the larger donor advised funds, they have state-of-the-art technology. So by record keeping, I'm really talking about from the client's point of view. How much did I give so far this year? Who did I give it to? If I go out longer, what did I do last year, 3 years, 5 years? And the ability to, as you're making the grants, to specify whether you're honoring an individual, whether it's going into a special purpose fund within the organization. So much easier using the DAF technology. Also, many of the major DAFs have links directly into Charlie Navigator and other research bases, allowing the family to actually understand how effective that charity is, what the ratings are, and other key pieces of information to make sure they want to continue giving to that charity, whether they want to increase the gift, letting them be smarter donors. So we've covered separation of the timing, we've covered simplification, and then we've got income taxes. DAFs can actually result in a deduction at fair market value on gifts of the same property to a family foundation may result in a deduction at cost. And let me just kind of remind you of the rules. Gifts of property, not cash, but gifts of property are generally only deducted up to the cost basis. There are, however, many valuable exceptions which we as advisors and our clients count on, and I'll touch on a few. First, the biggest exception is publicly traded marketable securities, including stocks, bonds, ETFs, and mutual funds, held for more than 1 year, are deductible at fair market value at the time of gift. And another favorite is tangible property, such as art and collectibles, that are held for more than 1 year, are deductible at fair market value, but only if they are given to a charity that's using it in fulfilling its exempt purpose. If given to a charity that does not use it in its exempt purpose, the deduction is limited to cost. For example, giving art to an art museum should qualify for deductibility at fair market value, while the same gift given to a medical research facility probably does not. Probably it's only limited to cost. Let's take a look about the impact of this charitable giving deduction and what it means to your client. By making a qualified gift of highly appreciated assets, not only can that taxpayer be eligible for the charitable deduction of fair market value, they're also eliminating the potential capital gain on the appreciation. Let's talk dollars. We're accountants here. For instance, a client in the habit of making charitable gifts using cash with about $10,000 a year, which saves them between federal and state income taxes about $4,500. If instead of cash, they gave very highly appreciated qualified securities with almost no tax basis, they would still have saved that $4,500 in taxes from the charitable deduction, but they would also save themselves from eventually paying $3,100 of capital gains taxes. So clients are pleased when they find out that doing a bit of charitable planning, that donations are only cost them as little as 24 cents on the dollar. Each client is in a different situation. You've got to do your own math. This is just an average. Highly appreciated, zero cost, 24 cents, based on my example. We like happy clients. So the fourth reason I like the use of a donor advised fund is creating a vehicle for sharing family values and succession without necessarily having the headache of creating your own family foundation. Most donor advised funds allow you to name successors, creating much of the benefit of a private foundation without the hassles. Keep in mind that DAF may also serve as a recipient of both charitable remainder trusts and the annuity from charitable lead trusts. They can also be the recipient of required distributions from family foundations. And this is just a small little idea I use. Sometimes we set up a sleeve within a family donor-advised fund, a donor-advised fund account created. We can create a sub-account or a separate account where there's just a small portion of the family's charitable endowment. And maybe that sleeve is turned on for grandchildren to learn to basically make decisions on grant making, make decisions on investment management. There's a lot of ways you can use donor advised funds to basically keep the family together, communicate, share legacy, and share values. Last but not least, my number five reason for liking donor advised funds is investment control. If you give the entire amount you were planning to give to a charity in a single year, you don't get to invest it. The charity does. In the case of donor-advised funds, again, depending on the size of the account and which donor-advised fund you're in, it can be invested in their pooled vehicles or, in many cases, individually managed by the client or the investment advisor. Now, donor-advised fund administrators often require review of the allocation, or if you're putting non-marketable security investments in there, they're going to want to take a review to make sure that it's still being invested and the portfolio still meets their requirements as far as being a fiduciary. I just want to add some notes to beware of. The donor-advised fund can't be used when the donor receives any personal benefit, such as a meal at a charity dinner or a ticket to an event. If there is any benefit, none of the gift qualifies. I know some clients try to separate out by separately writing a check for the dinner and trying to get the rest of the event paid for by the donor advised fund. That does not work. If there is an event the client wants to sponsor, then I will advise that the client cannot attend the event and they should give back that dinner ticket to the charity for them to use for another purpose. Also, in the case of a DAF, the good news is that the service is taking a slightly softer view on when your client also has a written pledge. Those rules, the leniency is an IRS notice 2017-73, some of the requirements include there can be no reference in the acknowledgement to the original pledge. The other note I would like to make is that donor advised funds do charge fees. There can be an annual fee, there can be an asset under management fee. There are often fees built into the investment options, and fees if you're going to put special assets into that donor advised fund. Most of the time, they're very reasonable, but you really need to take a look and make sure you and your client are familiar and comfortable with the fee arrangements. Now I want to shift into my beyond those five basic reasons that just about everybody should have a donor advised fund. I want to talk about those situations where you have an individual with a potential gift of what we call a complex asset. These complex assets, not cash, not marketable securities, held for more than 1 year, may be deductible at fair market value if given to a public charity or an operating foundation. Most private foundations, family foundations, are not operating, and you simply do not qualify for fair market value deductions of gifts of these complex assets. Meaning that if you give a gift of a piece of your operating business or an investment partnership, perhaps, into a non-operating foundation, they may only be deductible at cost. A DAF is a public charity. And even though your client has what feels like a self-directed account in that donor-advised fund, it is a public charity. Meaning, gifts of complex assets can result in a deduction at full fair market value. There are some issues to be aware of, though, and limitations. If you're going to gift a complex asset into a public charity, including a donor-advised fund, there cannot be a prearranged deal to sell back the asset to the donor or someone related or an entity related to the donor. There could be assignment of income issues. If a deal is about to be inked, an LOI signed, everything's going ahead, it's likely too late to make a gift to a donor-advised fund without having your client be responsible for picking up the capital gains tax on the eventual sale. You'll need to work with counsel. You'll need to do your own research. But try to get ahead of a deal. I prefer as much lead time as possible. So conversations with clients really need to happen early during a pre-liquidity planning so that you don't have a potential assignment of income issue. Also be aware of encumbered property. By this, I mean mortgage real estate, leveraged businesses, leveraged real estate, all of those things could create bargain sale issues, giving away a partnership interest that has negative tax basis. All of those create potential for negative tax consequences for your donor. S-corps have a slew of issues. It still may be possible, but those issues need to be managed with special care. And watch out whenever you have an operating business for unrelated business income tax issues. That would probably mostly apply to the charity receiving it, but everybody needs to be aware of what those are. And then some practical advice if you're considering giving or helping your clients give a complex asset to a public charity, including a donor advised fund. Reach out to that particular fund. Most of the DAFs have teams that specialize in these types of gifts, and they can be enormously helpful. From my perspective, both the teams at Fidelity Charitable and Schwab Charitable have been extraordinarily helpful to us and to our clients in deciding how, when, and if to make such gifts. Number two, understand and have the client understand ahead of time that DAFs generally don't want to own illiquid assets that don't have a potential for liquidity. They may actually turn down a very, very valuable business interest or other private type investment interest due to negative unrelated business income tax issues or just illiquidity. The larger the DAFs, generally the more flexible they are because they have room for illiquidity. Well, a smaller donor advised fund may not. And remember, back to our substantiation, you will need full substantiation, acknowledgments, appraisals for gifts of these complex assets to the donor advised fund. And they can be expensive. and they often require the attention of internal folks at your clients' companies, whether it's the financial folks, the legal folks. And that could be kind of a little difficult if the folks are also working on other transactions, including a potential monetization event. And remember that gift to DAFs may also require additional legal work at the entity level and may entail additional complexity in a deal process. Best to get all the owners on board for efficiency. So if there are several partners that may be dealing on thinking about making a gift to DAF or need to be educated about the benefits to them, that's your role as a CPA advisor. Help the team understand the benefit and what's appropriate for them, and then get them together. Because if you can save on sharing the cost of appraisals and legal work and related stuff, it just makes everything easier for everybody. So I want to mention that when we talked earlier about clients being really, really pleased when they learn that their charitable gifts may cost them as little as 24 cents on the dollar, they are euphoric when there's a gift of a piece of a business or investment ahead of a potential monetization event, because those numbers are so huge and they're creating a legacy for charitable giving that can last their lifetime and potentially the lifetimes of their children and heirs. In closing, donor advised funds can be a great tool to help your clients receive an immediate tax deduction, invest the principals free of taxes, and be able to distribute to charity as your client and their named successors recommend. Keep in mind, the donor advised fund may also serve the family as the recipient of both the charitable remainder and charitable lead trusts. The AICPA and my colleagues at the Colony Group hope that today's podcast has left you with a level of appreciation and curiosity. Much of my material today comes from our book, Financial Planning for Executives and Entrepreneurs, available on Amazon. On behalf of the PFP section, this has been Nadine Lee of the Colony Group. If you enjoy this podcast, I encourage you to visit the PFP section's website. Stay tuned for Sarah Bradley, who will tell you how to find these valuable resources. Again, thank you for listening.
And thank you for sharing with our community of listeners. Want more information, resources, tools, and guidance on technical and practice management topics? Visit aicpa.org/PFP and check out the show notes for this episode as well. So if you're not already a member, think about joining the PFP section, which is designed to save you time, help you best serve your clients, and take your financial planning practice to the next level. You'll gain access to a robust selection of high-quality technical and practice management resources like guides, 24/7 access to an online learning library, client communication and education tools, up to 8 hours of free CPE, and more. Don't forget to leave us a review so we can continue bringing valuable and relevant content. And subscribe to our podcast channel so you don't miss an episode. Thanks for listening, and I look forward to next time.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.